I'm Charlotte.
And I'm Lauren. Our pronouns are she, her. This is D-Myth Turns the Page,
the podcast where we stand behind the lens,
we pout and strike a pose,
and get magical with Jan Dunning about her book, Mirror Me. Hi, Jan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell our listeners about yourself before we get into your book?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I have, this is my first book and I've been writing all my life, but on the way to writing this book, I've done quite a lot of different things. So my background is in art and I'm actually a photographer when I'm not writing and a teacher. And yeah, and then before I did that, I had quite a lot of time where I spent modelling in the fashion industry. So yeah, my background is in the sort of creative industries, but it's taken me quite a long time to get into writing.
I think we can tell from the book that you're a photographer with some of the detail that you've gone into.
Oh, hopefully. Yeah, definitely. My main character is a photographer, obviously. And it was quite important to me that she was, because I really wanted to write about image. And, you know, as you know, the book is all about fashion and images. And so I really wanted her to think about how she creates her own images.
So before we get into your book, we always like to ask our guests what kind of books they like to read.
Okay. Well, it's really hard because the moment somebody asks you what you like reading, you just sort of blank on it. But I guess I mostly read children's and YA these days, just because that's what I'm writing. So I want to kind of immerse myself with those worlds. I do read adult fiction. I always read fiction. I love fiction. I guess if I was picking a genre, I like stories set in the real world, but I love it if there's a sort of magical or a supernatural thread or element. So I guess I like sort of magic realism. I'll definitely choose something like that. I like stories about transitional moments. I like rites of passage stories. I like sort of where the main characters are learning something about themselves, I guess. I like a good, strong, feisty narrator. I love strong female character. Yeah, that kind of thing, I suppose. You know, a strong voice is really important to me. But I'm thinking about what I've read recently. What have I loved? I just finished The Blue Book of Nebo, which is fantastic. If you've read that, that's Manon Stephan Ross. And that was really amazing. So that's a sort of, I guess it's a speculative fiction. It's about a boy and his mom living in a post-apocalyptic world. And it's really poignant. I love a story that makes me cry. Should have said that. I do like a story that's really moving. So it kind of ticks the boxes. And then I just read, and this is adult, but I just read Demon Copperhead, which is the Barbara Kingsolver book. That's the retelling of David Copperfield. And it's utterly amazing. And that's the only adult fiction that I've read recently. But it was so amazingly good and inspiring. And a retelling, which I do love.
Were you a fairy tale kid?
Was I? Yeah, I guess I was. I had all the Ladybird fairy tale books with the really, really creepy illustrations, which my parents still have at their house. So sometimes if I go back and visit them and I pull one off the shelf, I like to freak my own children out with the images because some of them are really terrifying. I think Rumpelstiltskin is maybe the most, I don't know. I was going to say disturbing, but it's not necessarily. Some of them have got really quite dark images, but I loved all of those. So yeah, I mean, I did like a fairy tale, definitely.
And where did the inspiration for your book come from?
Well, Mirror Me is, it's a thriller set in the fashion world. So obviously I'm drawing on my fashion background massively. Although, you know, it has got this sort of supernatural thread. And I didn't actually meet any supernatural supermodels when I was modelling, sadly. Well, maybe. I mean, I didn't know if I'd met any, but... It's drawing on my fashion background hugely and also my work as a photographer. But then again, my interest in retellings, because it is a retelling of Snow White. Not that you need to know it. I think, you know, I hope that you could read the story and enjoy it and fly through the plot. And if you didn't realise at any point that it was a Snow White retelling, hopefully you wouldn't feel like you'd lost anything. I quite like retellings if they're really subtle anyway, myself. So that you sort of just notice little things afterwards and you realise and you go, oh, I love that. I love the name here or the, you know, you just realise, it's like a little Easter egg, isn't it? When you kind of realise that it was a retelling, but it's not, you know, the first thing that I want readers to know about it. But so mainly the inspiration came from fashion, I suppose, and wanting to write about that world, which is an amazing world, and it's quite fairy tale and magical. It can be.
I think we spotted 6 big Snow White Easter eggs. So I'm hoping at the end you can tell us if we missed any.
Okay. Do you want to tell us what
we spotted? We'll tell you as we get through, because some of it's not spoilery and some of it kind of is. So we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
You can tell us at the end what we missed.
There's some obvious ones. I mean, Freya, my main character, her middle name is Yuki, which means snow in Japanese. And there is a backstory for Freya and her mom, which happens in Japan and Tokyo. And she was born in Tokyo in a snowstorm. So that's why she has the middle name that she has. But that's the first sort of indication that you get. If you want to pick up on it, but again, it's not really important.
Well, talking of Easter eggs, let's talk about your cover. Who was the cover designer? Is it on the back?
So the cover artist, but the illustration of the main character, this is the main character Freya on the cover, was Johnny Tarajosu, who is an amazing, amazing artist. And then his beautiful image went to the Scholastic Design Department, and Beth, the designer at Scholastic, added all the amazing touches, so it looks like a magazine cover very deliberately. Yeah. That was all Beth adding the font that looks like it should say Vogue, and all the sort of, you know, the catchphrase, the headlines that fashion magazines have that make you pick them up. So I mean, yeah, it just blew me away. I feel very, very lucky to have such an eye-catching cover.
And the broken mirror in the O.
Yeah, all the little details, I know, the tiny details that even if you notice Freya's got she's wearing a charm bracelet. Particularly love that it has a camera on it. It makes me really, really happy because it's a little nod to her photography, which I really, really like. The apple was controversial though.
It has an apple and it has a comb as well on her charm bracelet. And I really like the fact that she's got freckles.
Yes, so she does, and it's one of the things that she doesn't like about herself. She has a bit of a checklist generally, like I think, well, certainly like I did as a teenager and like lots of teenagers do, that she's very self-critical, and that all sorts of things that she perceives are flaws. And part of her journey in the book is that she learns to really accept herself as she is, and she learns to see her flaws not as flaws at all, but as the things that make her unique. And she completely reevaluates a relationship with perfection. So yeah, she does have freckles, which in a way, this image, I suppose, if it was from, she goes on a shoot, and we should say she does get scouted to be a model, and she reluctantly goes on a fashion shoot. And if that image, the image on the cover, were to come from the shoot, ought not to have freckles, because on the shoot she is completely made up to look very perfect. So, but I love that their freckles are on the cover, because I just think it makes her really real and gorgeous.
And she's got red nail varnish and
she does.
And red coat, which is a reference in the book as well.
Red is quite important. Yeah.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fiercest of them all? Freya's quiet life is turned upside down by Bella, the glamorous former supermodel who's about to marry Freya's dad. But how does Bella look so impossibly perfect, and could she be using Freya's family for her own sinister purposes? Freya goes undercover into the intimidating world of high fashion, determined to stop Bella's ruthless plans.
I am such a cat lady, so it made me really happy that she had a cat in the book, and that the fact you named the cat Kodak as well. I thought that was, it was so, so cute.
Well, yeah, thank you. I think I've decided I'm going to have a cat in every book I write now. So it's basically a sort of baseline. I think it might have to go into like future contracts or something. But yeah, Kodak is a black and white cat. So that was the only name that this cat could have. And also Freya's dad is a photographer, and, you know, they're a family of photographers. So that was kind of important to have that little nod. And her dad's like an old school photographer, so he would shoot on film. And, you know, so it was a little nod to that world.
Found it really interesting that you've got someone who spent his life shooting things in a more old school way with film, who's then talking about how things aren't like that anymore. And she, me and Charlotte, are probably a bit older than your target audience, but we're people who would have used like disposable cameras and stuff like that. Things that aren't a thing anymore.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's sadly sort of Well, I don't know. I was going to say it's sort of dying out, but it isn't. There are pockets of people that are still really into film photography. And actually, in my own photography, I always shoot on film, and I actually make pinhole cameras, which is another like geeky aside, but I'm really into sort of very, very authentic old ways of making images. And pinhole camera basically is just a box with a hole in it. And my pinhole camera takes film. So it's just like literally opening the shutter to let light in the hole. And yeah, so I can geek on about film photography for a really, really long time. But yeah, it's a world that's really changed. And when I started modeling, everybody shot on film and made Polaroid images. And then there was a very definite sea change where everything went digital, and it really changed how shoots work and what happened on a shoot. And you could actually, in a way, I want to say it took away some of the magic, because when we shot on film, we didn't really know if we'd got the image. You know, you'd be posing, the photographer would be shooting, and you'd get a sort of an energy from the shoot, and you'd feel like you were creating the image that you wanted. And then at some point someone would say, I think we've got that, and you'd move on. But you never really knew until the contact sheets came back. And then when we moved to digital, that world completely changed, and you would see straight away on the monitor if you'd got the shot. And if you hadn't got the shot, you would go back and do it again and again. And I don't know, I mean, you'd think it would make it quicker, but I actually think it made it slower, and it sort of took away something that was, you know, a little bit magical.
It's just the instant knowing, I guess. Yeah, you can always go, okay, let's tweak this, let's try that.
Yeah, well, I think we're all editors now rather than photographers in a way. Like, we get really, really good at choosing an image and looking at them and saying, oh, that one works and that one doesn't work. And it's a different skill. It's creative as well, but it's slightly different from, you know, composing an image in your camera and just going with the feel in the moment and stuff like that. So it's quite a different world.
Your book is set in London, which we love because, as we mentioned before recording, we're London girls. But the book also makes reference to Tokyo, where Freya's parents met and they used to live there. So why, of all places known for fashion and style, did you pick Tokyo?
Well, because I have spent lots of time in Tokyo as a model and as a photographer as well. And I just absolutely love Japan, and the city itself is amazing. People are amazing. I've had such a fantastic experience in that city and been so warmly welcomed in all my creative work there. So it was just like a nice little nod to a city that I'm really, really fond of, and I find it really interesting. Plus, in terms of fashion, there are some amazing designers that have come out of Japan, and probably the most important designer for me is someone called Rei Kawakubo, who is the main designer at Comme des Garçons. And I was really lucky. I modeled for her. I was in her catwalk shows. And she is just an incredibly creative and inventive designer, an avant-garde designer. She's an artist. You know, her work is the very opposite of commercial. She's incredible. And I just kind of was thinking about Tess, who is Freya's mom, who trains to be a fashion designer in Tokyo, and thinking about, you know, basically sort of doing something that was a bit of an homage to Rei Kawakubo, really, by writing about, you know, fashion in Japan, setting it in Tokyo.
I've been to Tokyo and I want to go back so badly. I didn't get to spend much time there, but I absolutely loved it there.
It's an amazing city. Amazing.
It seems to be a love letter to fashion and modelling, and the little details, like we said, about photography. You've also put in little details about casting and all the model fittings. One thing I really liked is when the model came in for Fashion Week and she'd already been to another show, because that's realistic. That's what happens. These models bounce from show to show.
They really do. Yeah, exactly. They come in with all the hair and makeup that they've had from the previous show, and everyone goes, no, because they've got to take it all apart.
They've got to take it all off and start again. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you sort of say that it's a love story to fashion, because in a way, that was a really tricky thing to get right. So, because it's really difficult. It's not a perfect industry, but I didn't want to write an anti-fashion book. And I think that, you know, that's been done very well by other people. And that it's not that there is no critique of fashion in there too. I just wanted to strike a balance. And I talked a lot about this with my editor at Scholastic. And we really wanted to write a book that would not deter young fashionistas who want to get into the fashion world from entering that world. But we also wanted to write something that was also realistic about fashion. So it was about, you know, talking about all the amazing things about it. There are some amazingly creative people. There are some fantastic photographers. There's some brilliant designers. But there's because it's not perfect, there are some things that are not wonderful and need to change. So there are examples of that in the book. You know, the way that the models are treated on the casting isn't particularly great, which is also part of the fact that they're a casting that Bella, our antagonist, is controlling, and she's not particularly great. But also there are some sort of, I want it to be about, you know, how fashion can be really inspiring and an amazing creative form of expression. So it's about getting that balance between, you know, these are the great things and these are the things that still need to change.
And like clipping clothes and using pegs and stuff to fit them to models so that they get the perfect shot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, nothing is, it's all an illusion and nothing is exactly what you see. And you go on a shoot and you wear an outfit and the stylist will come around the back of you and clip you. And I think there's a bit in the book where Freya's standing on a shoot and the stylist slides a shoulder pad in under one shoulder, and Freya sort of turns around to get the other shoulder pad, and the stylist says, oh no, you only need one because you're lopsided. And that actually happened to me, so I just thought I have to put that in the book. Silly things. And I'm okay, you sort of go on a shoot and you have all these whatever, these insecurities about that you always have before you go in front of the camera anyway, and then you find out that you've got more things that you should be insecure about, like the fact that one of your shoulders is higher than the other or whatever.
My mum used to say about the dress that you make for the photo and the dress you make for the shops might not necessarily be the same.
Yeah, totally true. Yeah, the sample sizes for the shoots always used to be really small. I don't know if that will have changed very much. I think sample sizes are still really small because they're designed to fit models and not designed to fit real people in the shops.
I was watching a documentary about couturier house, and they were saying that if you can fit into the dress, it saves like 30 grand. If you can fit into the dress that the model can wear. So a lot of these rich older ladies who can afford this stuff, they're starving themselves to fit into these dresses to save this money. It's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Couture was always the type of fashion that was known for having the slimmest, tiniest silhouettes. And it's so expensive to produce it. So that would make a lot of sense. You know, they're one-off pieces, they're artworks.
We sort of spoke about this already, but we really love how you mentioned different kinds of photography. And you treat it in a way that is an art form rather than just being something really disposable, like people putting things on Instagram. And that's something that we thought is really cool. And the fact that we see Freya at a photography exhibition the same way you would go to an art exhibition.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I wanted to write about photography, but because photography is something that anyone can do these days. You know, it's really different from when I was a teenager. Everybody's got a camera now, everyone's got a camera phone, so we're all photographers, we're always taking pictures. So I did want to think about how she would make her images, what's important to her when she makes images. And she starts the book without really a sense of her own voice as a photographer. So she's really keen on photography and she's got all the skills. Her dad's taught her a lot. She's technical, but she's not really got anything to say. She doesn't have a voice yet. And hopefully by the end of the book, you can see that she's got a really strong voice and she's really thinking about images. But I don't think it is the message isn't really about you have to have a really amazing camera and you have to be a serious photographer. You know, she does take loads of pictures on her phone all the time. And it's more about, you know, what you actually put into your picture. It's why I've included a quote from one of my favorite photographers at the beginning, which is a quote from Ansel Adams, and he says, you don't take a photograph, you make it. So it's really, I really want readers to think about that. What does that mean? You're not just snapping something in the moment. You've got to really think about the message that you're putting across. You know, why you're taking this picture now, you know, what is it going to say to people looking at it? So it's kind of about that, not about being too super technical, but just putting thought into photography. So if it comes across like photography as an art form, I'm really pleased about that, because it's so easy, isn't it, these days to just snap a selfie. And hopefully it's talking about, you know, how can you do it a little bit more thoughtfully with a little bit more meaning.
Well, yeah, like you were mentioning, taking multiple and going, oh, that's not good enough, try it again. And like you said, people become editors. But I, as I mentioned before, I loved the scene in the exhibition. First of all, I've been to the Photographers Gallery in London with photographers. I used to live with photographers at uni. My housemates were on photography courses and they lived and breathed it. And I got Cindy Sherman vibes.
Yeah.
Was that intentional?
Well, yeah, it definitely was intentional. I love Cindy Sherman. She is absolutely amazing. And if anyone listening to this doesn't know her work, they should go and look at it immediately. So she is sort of like, she's like the original selfie artist, really. I mean, she takes self-portraits, but what she does that's so incredible is that she builds characters and she uses props and makeup, and she's incredibly creative with it. And so she sets up staged images of herself. And it's just a really amazing way of making self-portraits. Mm. So I kind of wanted Freya, my main character, to see these, because all she sees up until that point is the girls at school taking selfies together with their heads together. And there's nothing wrong with that, but she's only seen one type of self-portrait making. She's never learned that there are other ways that she might make an image of herself. So when she goes to this exhibition and she sees the images on the wall, and they are based on Cindy Sherman's, although we didn't say in the book that they're Cindy's, but hopefully she'd be flattered, because it, you know, we love Cindy. But when she sees these, she gets this sense that there's, you know, there's a bit of a spark ignited inside her, because she's got this sense that she could maybe take photographs slightly differently. She doesn't have to do it the way she's seeing everybody else doing it.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, is the significance of Jake taking her to a self-portrait exhibition. The fact that she shies away from taking self-portraits deliberately, she shies away from it.
Well, I don't think Jake knows that at this point, because they don't.
No, but the reader does. Well,
but yes, exactly. Of course she needs to go and see. That's what she needs to learn, isn't it, at that point? She really needs to start having her worldview of that kind of thing opens up a little bit. She needs to start seeing that there are other ways to make a picture of and make an image of yourself. So yeah, so if they end up there by accident, kind of, but you know, there's definitely, they both learn a lot from it. I like to think Jake learns a lot from it as well. He's having his eyes open in a different way about what it's like to be female and take photographs of yourself.
I've never heard of Cindy Sherman, so everything you've just said has gone over my head, but I'm going to be googling her afterwards, because I'm really excited to see the stuff that you're talking about, because it sounds really interesting to be able to see it.
Yeah, what I think is really brilliant about her, actually, and what I think is inspiring for people to see, is that she is not afraid to look let's say, like raw or I don't want to say ugly, really, because it's such a sort of subjective judgment, but she's not afraid to put herself out there looking at less than perfect, should we say. And it's part of the character, and it's what makes her images really compelling, that they are not perfect, that the characters have got all these so-called flaws and things that you notice, these details, and it builds up this incredible narrative around her work, and you just get so sucked into the story of the woman and the image, and it's I just find it really rich and inspiring.
That's something that Freya notices when she sees the portraits in the gallery, that she's not afraid, that it's of a person who's not afraid to look unfiltered,
yeah,
and to be more raw, as you said, and more natural. And that's probably so different to all of the selfies of the girls that she's seen, especially someone that she used to be friends with, who is now one of those girls who just everything's about perfection.
Yeah, I mean, she's lot her so-called best friend Saskia has kind of ditched her and upgraded her friendship group at the beginning of the story, and Freya's feeling quite outside of that, like she's missed a chapter in the handbook in a way. She doesn't know, she's not quite sure what she's supposed to be doing. She just feels very outside of that, outside of fashion, outside of the sort of selfie culture that's going on. And she's torn between wanting to know more and wanting to be part of it, but also feeling like if she does try, she's just going to get it wrong. So she just doesn't. She doesn't use her social media. She doesn't put images online. She's just second guessing herself all the time with fashion and images in that way.
That's something to me as well that felt quite reflective of the fact she doesn't have a mum around. I remember being in secondary school and I had no idea about how to put eyeliner on. And so my mum used to do it for me.
Yeah.
And then one day my mum was ill and couldn't do it. And I was like, oh God, what am I going to do? How can I go to school without eyeliner on? And then I started putting it on a slightly different way. She used to put it on the waterline and I put it under the waterline because I can't stick a pencil in my eye. That's not happening. And I've done it that way ever since. But she was the one who introduced me to makeup in the first place. And it's a thing you tend to bond with your mum over more, I think.
Yeah.
Why would her dad know about makeup?
Yeah, I think Freya's dad tries very hard, but it's just not his natural world, is it? So so she's missed out a few of those steps, maybe, I think.
So it was something I was fascinated by. And actually the way that makeup can make you feel is a real positive and give you, not like to completely change yourself, but just a little bit, just to give you a little bit of a boost?
Yeah, completely. I mean, this is another thing I think we had to get really right with the book. So there's a, so Freya's best friend is Sam, and he wants to be a hair and makeup artist, and really, really wanted to make sure that we weren't saying anything negative about people who like to dress up and wear the latest fashions and wear makeup. You know, that's there's nothing, we don't want to say anything about that and put people off doing that. It's just a form of self-expression. But so with Sam, we really wanted him to be there saying to Freya, look, it's about, you've got this idea that makeup is about covering things up and hiding who you are, and it's not like that. It doesn't have to be like that at all. You could use makeup to really express yourself, to really bring your unique self forward if you want to. And I think that when she can, when she sees what he can do and what he's talking about, it starts to have an impact on her. And then by the end of the story, she's using makeup much more creatively.
Well, again, using makeup is an art form, or it can be.
Yeah. Oh, completely. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen Glow Up?
I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And the bit I really was obsessed with, and my boyfriend got really into, was this sci-fi, what's it called? Special effects makeup.
Oh, yeah, like prosthetics and things. Yeah.
Yeah, he got really into that.
It's amazing. It's absolutely an art form, and people are, there are some amazingly talented people that can do incredible things. It's just, yeah, inspiring.
Stepping away from one creative thing and sort of moving on to another. So how do you go about writing something that has nods to a fairy tale that I think probably everyone that reads the book will know in some way? Most people will probably know the story of Snow White, but you've given it a very different and unique voice, and it feels just so fresh and modern.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's really nice to hear. I mean, I don't really know how to answer that. I mean, I think, you know, lots of people try and retell fairy tales, and I really enjoy that. I mean, I really like reading retellings, but I don't think you often read contemporary retelling, you know, retelling set in a contemporary world. So hopefully that is something that's quite new about it. You often read fantasy retelling, or I've often come across fantasy retellings. But yeah, I suppose it's just about deciding what parts of the fairy tale you're going to use and what you're going to leave, what you're going to put aside, and maybe thinking about which parts are due for a bit of an update. And, you know, quite a lot of fairy tales have got some really passive heroines in them, and, you know, and I very definitely wanted to update Snow White and make her a really active heroine, which Freya eventually is by the end of it. And I just also thought, you know, there's a lot that it has to say that is still really relevant to us today. It's really, you know, Snow White is about beauty standards, isn't it? Because the evil queen is obsessed with who is the fairest of them all, and she won't rest because she thinks there's somebody, there could be somebody out there that's not as beautiful, that's more beautiful than her. And, you know, we still do constantly compare ourselves and think about these things. And I just thought maybe we should be, I mean, you know, I want to write something that's asking, like, who gets to decide really who is the fairest of them all? And yeah, so that's something I just thought maybe was due for a bit of a refresh.
And it's interesting that you've put it in a world where it's all about youth and beauty.
Oh yeah, it had to be in the fashion world, didn't it? I mean, it just makes perfect sense to put it in the fashion world, which is still really obsessed with youth. Yeah, I mean, I think the fashion world is becoming more diverse in its presentation of beauty, I hope. And I see really amazing things like, you know, I look at Vogue now and it's edited by Edward Enninful, and I think he's doing really amazing things for diversity in beauty. But he's only one person, and, you know, there are so many different aspects of the fashion world, and I think some are still trying to catch up, and there's still loads to do. So yeah, work in progress.
Well, we said that obviously most people know Snow White who are picking up the book, and some of the Easter eggs that we spotted were obviously the mirror, Bella's perfume being in the shape of an apple bottle, yeah. And with three that we'll mention in the spoilers, but obviously Freya's mum's surname is White.
Yes. Yeah, so she's essentially Snow White. And also Jake's surname is Hunter, so he's the hunter. So Bella tasks him with taking, when Bella decides that she needs to get rid of Freya, she tasks Hunter, who's an intern at her model agency, to drive Freya off to boarding school. And instead of In one of the original, I mean, there's so many different versions of Snow White, but in one of the versions of Snow White, the hunter's supposed to bring back the heart of Snow White, isn't he? But in this version, Freya kind of dupes him and ditches him at a train station and manages to wangle her way back to London. So, yeah, there's various things like that in there. The corset scene as well. Did you catch that one?
So, yes. Those we didn't mention because we mentioned those in the spoilery section.
Oh, shall I be quiet? Okay, that comes later. And the comb.
Yeah. That's the other one we mentioned.
Yeah, there's loads. There are no dwarves. Did you spot that?
We did.
Yeah.
Could have given her like 7 friends to help her throughout the...
I think she probably does have about 7, but I deliberately left out the dwarves. I'm not a fan of the dwarves. And I felt like it's quite a Disney version. And I sort of was going a bit more Brothers Grimm version, if anything. Yeah.
Talking about diversity, Edward Enifil is in Stephen Bartlett's Diary of a CEO podcast. I think that's the latest episode. So the fact that, nowadays more people having a voice from all races, sexualities, genders, I think it is slowly opening up. Obviously, there's a long way to go, but
yeah,
the fact that stuff like podcasts exist means that hopefully it could be more accessible as well.
Absolutely. We were talking about age though, weren't we? And age is one of the things I think you just don't see. You still don't see older models generally in fashion. Some of the catwalk shows, sometimes the designers do put older supermodels down the runway.
But they're still supermodels.
Supermodels. I still think, we haven't got very far in terms of our attitude to age. So that's maybe something that can be added to the list of things.
This is the point of the episode where if you haven't read the book, you should stop listening. Come back when you've finished because we're about to delve into spoilers.
So when Freya and Bella meet, like the first few times that they meet, there are some little things that happen between them. Freya takes a picture of Bella and Bella's not happy, but the whole camera gets wiped. Could be deliberate, could be an accident. And then Freya also has a casting agent's card that is given to her, and Bella just picks it up and puts it in her pocket. And they're little subtle things that in and of themselves don't make Bella seem bad. And it could be a misunderstanding. And I've never had a step parent of my own, but I can imagine that it's quite an awkward thing on both sides. And Freya would take instantly against her and see the worst in her because she feels her dad is taken away from her. So is that deliberate from you to make it a little bit ambiguous with the intent at first?
Yeah, very much so. So I think it's really important that you don't immediately know that Bella is not a great person. You get hints, but I really wanted that sort of ambiguity to come across so that we can see where Freya might be getting her ideas from, but at the same time, is she overreacting? And I just felt it was important to hold back on Bella. I didn't want her to be a pantomime villain, if you like. And I think in early drafts, maybe she was a little bit pantomime. So I did really pare back on what she does and made her sort of a little sweeter, really. But I think in the end, she's a bit of a classic gaslighter. She's a classic frenemy where she says these things and you can't actually pin her down on exactly why it makes you feel so rubbish. But she is able to make you feel like that. She's just somebody else hearing wouldn't necessarily have a problem with her, but Freya can really takes it to heart. And so it was really difficult to get that balance right, if you like. I also wanted her to be a bit more of a layered stepmother because, it's a bit of a sort of cliche to have an evil stepmother, especially in a fairy tale. So I hope that she has got a few more layers and that by the end of the book, you can see why she has been behaving the way she does. And you can kind of look into her background, the kind of world she's grown up in, the kind of values that she's developed. And you can say, okay, well, is it really her fault in a way?
I think we're at a point now where we prefer women or characters in general to be a bit more nuanced. There's always been this dichotomy of a really, really good woman who's like a pinnacle of everything perfect. And then someone who's just flat out evil. So now we want characters that are a bit more morally grey, say, or a bit more nuanced, or they're bad for a reason.
Absolutely. And I think in a way, with Bella, hopefully, now we're talking spoilers, you can see that she's been manipulated by her mirror, and that she's grown up valuing youth and beauty, and she's not learned to value anything else about herself. So it's just a bit, it's sad for her, really, but she's not maybe the ultimate culprit. And in the end, in one of the earlier drafts, I didn't really punish Bella at all. So I let her get away with it because I felt sorry for her, and I felt that, you know, she wasn't really the real antagonist in the story. But then quite a few people read the story and felt that she did still contribute quite significantly to a lot of awful things that happened. So then we did punish her. But not as much as in the Snow White fairy tales, where I think one of them, the Brothers Grimm one, the evil queen has to dance in lead shoes until she dies. So we didn't do that to her.
I don't think that would translate quite as well now.
Throughout the book, starting from about the middle, we start to see a teaser campaign for a new brand, and it builds up and it builds up. And we find out that it's actually Bella's end game to, you know, appear on this runway and debut at London Fashion Week. So did you try and keep the build up authentic from things that you've seen, especially with social media and the fashion industry?
Kind of, but it was a bit exaggerated, if you know what I mean. Because if you look at the timeline, it all happens really, really,
really quickly.
Yeah. But in a way, I was trying to, it was a sort of metaphor for how much people get on the sort of whole hype. You know, people jump on things and they suddenly sort of bloom out of control. So it's about looking at how quickly things build when people start sharing them, and unquestioningly, if you like. So, yeah, I mean, I was looking at sort of some things that happen around building hype around fashion shows and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, people do plant teaser campaigns in social media these days, which wasn't something that you really saw a lot when I was modeling so much. But you do see very clever branding happening now. People are so sort of advertising savvy, aren't they, about how they, you know, viral word of mouth campaigns, you know, that's a really important thing to do if you're growing a brand. So although there is a magical kind of element to it in my story that's really making the hype sort of grow out of control, it is hopefully a bit reflective of what happens these days when brands are trying to publicize what they do.
Freya meets a model at the shoot who she first refers to as the Ice Queen, but she starts to sort of become friends with her. And when she talks to Myra, do you pronounce it?
Mara,
when she actually talks to her and learns her story, she finds out that she was an English student and she's actually educated. And Freya's really surprised about this. Is this something that sort of happened to you as a model? People were surprised that you'd studied English?
Sometimes, yeah. That's really funny. I suppose that might have been where that came from a little bit. I was trying to get across the idea that Freya had internalized all these assumptions about models and what they might be like. So she is quite surprised to find out that Mara is a student, that she's studying literature and mythology, that she thinks about these things quite deeply. Yeah, I mean, it did sort of happen to me that people were quite surprised, because I went to university before I became a model. And yeah, lots of models are very busy and don't have time to do that. But I certainly met a lot of really intelligent models who could easily have gone to university if they hadn't been doing something different with their lives, you know. So yeah, you do meet people that have an assumption still about, you know, brains and beauty not necessarily going together, and that's quite nice to challenge. But
I thought so. It's something that needs to be challenged. Again, it's the idea that women can be both and have layers.
Absolutely. And that you can care about your appearance and you can enjoy fashion and want to use clothes and makeup to express yourself and still be intellectual and thoughtful about things and about what you do in the world. Definitely.
And it's another thing that seems to be part of Freya's journey, to learning more about herself and kind of accepting these more feminine things.
Yeah, definitely. She's really thinking about, you know, who she is and how she's going to express that. And in its simplest terms, like how she's going to create an image of herself as well. So, you know, how does that come across in an image? You know, how you feel about yourself and how who you are, and how do you show that you accept yourself in a photograph?
When we get towards the end of the book, we find out that the real villain is the mirror, which I thought was really cool. And it's the mirror that's actually affecting people. And seeing some of the little mirror POV chapters before the actual chapters, I got some Gollum vibes from Lord of the Rings. You know, where the Gollum talks about us and the mirror talks about us, and you start to see how dangerous and sinister it is. And Gollum is affected more and more by the ring. And it's like the mirror, as things go on, and it's like the mirror almost grows in strength from all the power that it's getting. And I really liked that.
Oh, I love that. I never, the mirror is very My Precious, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, it does. It does. It picks up the hype and the influence that it's starting to have with Nightshade, which is the name of the fashion line. So yeah, as that grows in influence, the mirror's power gets stronger and stronger and stronger. But it was created under the mirror's influence in the first place. So it feels like this fashion line belongs to itself. It created it with Freya's mum, Tess, years and years ago in Japan, and then it never was shared with the world. So it wants to get its fashion line out there and doing all the damage it can.
Other Easter eggs we noticed, back to the Easter eggs, now we're in spoilers. So the comb that made Freya's head bleed, the tightening of the corset so much that she passed out, and these are clearly both nods to the original story, but also Jake's surname being Hunter, and he takes her away from her home.
Yep, absolutely. Good spots.
At a time where people are so obsessed with the idea of perfection, people want to emulate perfect lives that they see on Instagram or through plastic surgery. And not that I've watched it, but I've seen articles where I've been scrolling online about people going into Love Island, spending on plastic surgery before even going in.
Mm.
Are the messages in your book something positive, where a person doesn't need to change themselves outwardly to be happier, more confident? And is that something people you want to take away from your book?
I think so, absolutely. You know, it's a really, really tricky one, because I know that there are many people that will say, you know, well, this makes me feel better about myself. It's a really nuanced and difficult argument. But for teenage readers, my readers of Mirror Me, I just kind of want to say, you're enough as you are. And, you know, I try and talk about that in terms of making an image as a photographer. An image can be more interesting if you show your real self. It brings something really powerful to an image. So that's something that readers take away. I'd be really happy. I hope they take a message about how fashion should be creative and inclusive and expressive and not conforming and not narrow. You know, I hope that's something that they take with them. Yeah, I mean, I just think at that age, I just felt so deeply confused and insecure about so many things to do with how I looked and who I was, that I would really like to empower teenagers to take authentic images of themselves and to do away with any sort of, you know, chasing after perfection, which doesn't exist. What is perfection? There's no such thing.
I really like two things about what you've just said. So one was, when she finds her mum's notebook, the silhouettes aren't necessarily typical. Her mother was trying to be creative and creating all these different types of silhouettes, that including, you know, animal type shapes. And I really enjoyed that, because it's like, actually, yeah, fashion can be fun and it can be whatever you want it to be. My second thing was that Sam didn't feel any effects of the mirror, because he was absolutely fine with how he is.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, of course. It didn't work on him, because he was fine with himself. Yeah, totally. And Tess, her mum, Freya's mum, it was really important to me that as a designer, that she was really thinking about inclusive fashion, fashion for everybody, fashion that is expressive and creative, not fashion that's narrow in its vision. She refused to cut her fashion clothes on a narrow silhouette. She didn't even want to use a model to show her clothes when she was training. She tried to reject that. And obviously Freya doesn't know anything about this. She doesn't know about her mum's background. So she doesn't know her mum had held these values. So once she has worked it out, that's really powerful for her, because it kind of endorses some of the things she started to think as well. And it makes her feel more like, you know, they're both kind of on the same page with that.
Connected.
Yeah, connected, exactly.
But we don't find that out at first. At first, we are led to believe that Tess is actually really shallow. And I was so happy when we find out that Tess is different and had these good, positive values. So I thought that the fact that Freya's mom is such a positive influence, or wanted to be such a positive influence on fashion, I thought was really good, rather than you teasing us at first that she, she was shouting a little bit. I believed it. Because we don't know anything about Tess at first.
Well, she does fall under the Mirror's influence. And so she does design the Nightshade collection, which is the Mirror's collection. And it's completely, that collection completely embodies the Mirror's values. And it's a very exclusive collection for one size fits nobody. It's a collection that, you know, is the absolute opposite of what Tess's real work stands for. But she needs to kick the mirror. She needs to kick off the mirror's spell. She needs to break free of the mirror before she's able to, you know, recover her true values. Like, so I was mean, but she, you know, she did fall for the mirror. It's hard not to fall for the mirror.
I don't blame her for falling for the mirror. No. But at first, I think we feel like it's actually her rather than the mirror.
Yeah.
We've mentioned Sam, and I am so glad that you gave Sam a happy ending with his dad, and how his dad is now willing to accept what Sam wanted, because Sam kind of goes to him with this plan and this dream and kind of, this is what I want to do, this is how it's going to happen. And also being able to come out to his dad the way that he did and have such a positive reaction, like, when are we going to meet him, when's he coming over, that was so lovely after seeing tension between Sam and his dad throughout the book.
Well, he was also struggling with authenticity as well, but in a different way. So he's not hung up on his appearance like Freya is, but he's definitely hung up on what he thinks his dad might think of him if he knew what his real truth was. So he wants to be a hair and makeup artist, and he knows his dad is, well, he assumes his dad is going to not want that for him. And he's also gay, and he assumes his dad is going to find that really, really difficult and challenging. And it turns out he's wrong. And when he works up the courage to be his authentic self with his dad, and his dad is really accepting and warm, I did want him to have a happy ending, but I did work really closely with my editor on that story, because I felt a little bit worried about writing a coming out story, even for a minor character, without that experience. So my editor really guided me on that. And I'm really glad we did, because I think from what people are saying, Sam's story is really like an uplifting part of the book, and it's resonating with lots of people. So I'm glad we went there in the end.
He deserved it.
Yeah, definitely. But I like the idea that his dad as well is not the sort of blinkered, he's not somebody that has, he is accepting, and maybe Sam needs to think about the assumptions that he made about people as well. So, you know, that his dad isn't really, as close-minded as he suspected. He surprises him in a nice way.
I don't think you're going to answer this question, but was Bella always a bit bad, or is she totally warped by the mirror, or did it bring out something that was already there?
I don't know if I want to answer that. I do have an idea. She has a backstory going back to her childhood that I mapped out in my head. So I have a sense of, I think she's sadly just a product of her time, really. I don't think she's all bad. I think that she's just grown up in an environment where she's learned to value the wrong things. Can I say that?
You can, yeah. What I really want to ask is if she killed Tess, but I don't think you're going to give me that.
Oh, I'm going to leave that for you. So.
I mean, she did.
I'm going to just let everybody talk about that around me.
I think she did. Or if
she didn't, she was there.
Yeah, she was there. She either did it, engineered it, let it happen. I think she could have stopped it.
Okay.
I knew you wouldn't answer.
I think I'll just leave that one hanging. Sorry.
Thank you so much for coming to talk to us today. We really enjoyed Mirror Me. It was such a fun read.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really nice to chat.
At the point that we're talking to you, the book isn't out yet. So this might be really, really early days to ask. It's not out yet, is it?
It's out on the 8th of June.
Okay, no, I didn't think it's out.
Ridiculously soon. Yeah, it's about just a little bit over a week away.
So it's really, really early. But we also know how publishing works. So do you have anything else planned for the future?
Well, I do. But I don't think I'm able to talk about it just yet. But I am writing something. Yeah.
Where can people go to follow you and find out when you can talk about it?
Okay. Well, if people would like to do that, they can follow me on Twitter. I'm Jan Dunning 1. They can come to my Instagram, which is Jan Dunning Books. You notice the optimism of the plural books there. come and follow me, and hopefully I'll have news soon.
We'll put those in the episode description so people can follow you. And massive congratulations on your first book.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for hanging out with us today. And again, special thanks to Jan. Follow us on Instagram at Demythifying the Podcast for more episodes. And if you're liking what we're doing, please rate, subscribe and share. Check out our website at www.demythpod.co.uk. I've been Charlotte, she's been Lauren, and today we've been joined by Jan Dunning.